Today's reading is from the book of Exodus. That's on page 57 in your pew Bible if you'd like to follow along. It's chapter 3, verses 13 to 15. But Moses said to God, "If I come to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' what shall I say to them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am." He said thus further, "Thus you shall say to the Israelites, 'I am has sent me to you.'" God also said to Moses, "Thus you shall say to the Israelites, 'The Lord, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my title for all generations.'"
We have a substitute pastor today, my daughter announced, and my ears perked up. "Huh?" I asked. "It's pretend, Mama. Just pretend." She was holding her Colorform Holly Hobby doll in front of a congregation of other dollies and the like. "God needs us," Holly Hobby explained. "God needs us, so you have to listen. Because God needs us. We have to love each other and do good. God needs us." I tried to hold back my laughter. I also got my video camera as fast as possible. I was surprised, delighted, but still surprised. Usually, Molly's dolls are busy playing princess and mermaids, but this time, her dolly was preaching. She was playing church. And she had a message for all of her doll friends about God. I began to wonder, as she kept repeating that line about God needing us, what exactly it is she thought of God. She knows that we talk about God at church. Obviously, she knows I'm a pastor. She loves to sing Carry the Light. She's a PK if I ever saw one. But I did wonder, what does she think about God? Now, she's been in Sunday school since the day she was born. She's been cradled by this church, our community, since she was in the womb. As an embryo, she heard me preaching from the inside. She was destined to be a church kid. But that doesn't necessarily mean that she'd formulated thoughts on God. So as I watched her play with her dolly and proclaim ever so clearly that God needs us, I thought it was time for us to sit down and have a theological chat. Now, I was kind of embarrassed that as a pastor, I never really had a major theological conversation with my daughter, but she's only 4. However, I thought if the only time we talk theology is on Sunday mornings, then we're all guilty of the very thing I speak against, to not merely be Sunday morning Christians. So even though she's surrounded by it, she's clearly not only a Sunday morning Christian. I mean, she's at church all week long. She knows I'm a pastor. She's playing church. She's not lacking for exposure. But what does she think? What does she believe? How does she understand God? I realize that I don't really ask her that. I just talk about God like she knows what God is. So I figured I'd better ask her. "Molly, what is God?" "I don't know. You tell me." "No, you tell me." "Nothing." "Okay. Is God a woman or a man?" "Woman." "So is God a person?" "No." "Then what is God?" I continue to prod. "I don't know. Is God alive?" "No." "Is God dead?" "Yes." "God's dead?" "We can't see him." "Wait, I thought you said God was a woman." "Does not seeing God mean God is dead?" "I don't know." "Can we talk to God?" "Yes." "So maybe God isn't dead then. How do you talk to God?" "Just talk." Where is God? She gestured. In my heart. So is God alive in your heart? Yes. What about Jesus? He was alive a long time ago, but then he died. How did he die? I don't know. Was Jesus God? Yes. So can God die? I don't know. But if you talk to God, does that mean that God is alive? Yes. How do you know? I don't know. God is love. Love is alive? Of course, Mama. So as you can see, it was starting to get pretty confusing. And I decided to stop while I was ahead. But as I reflected, I thought about how convoluted this must all sound to a four-year-old. And then I realized it might also sound convoluted to grown-ups as well. We can't just assume that we all have the same understanding of God. I've had multiple years of theological training, and I still struggle to really talk about God. In a world like the one we're living in, we can't make assumptions that people know what we're talking about when we say that word. So what do we really mean when we say the word God? We're so used to using the terminology that it's not until we're trying to explain it to a child that we realize we really need to be able to articulate our understanding of God so we can be on the same page when we have that conversation. So that's what we're doing this Lent. We're trying to formulate our own understanding of God and faith, to explore our history, to figure out what makes sense, and dumping what doesn't, so we can get to a place where we can articulate our beliefs, and in doing so, embrace a living faith. We started this journey last week, and if you missed that first sermon, I really encourage you to pop onto our website and listen to the podcast, because this series is going to build from week to week. As you probably know by now, we're following Bishop Spong's book, Unbelievable. Many of you read this last summer in a book study, and we have those books available for you if you'd like to read along. We invite those of you that read the book and those of you that didn't all to come back to talk back after church weekly so that we can have a conversation. There's absolutely no way that I can cover the whole book in 20-minute segments, but together we can continue the conversation that you started last summer so that each of us can really be personal theologians, so that we can clearly talk about what we think and what we believe. We should be able to do this for ourselves personally. Each of us should know what we think, even as we're ever evolving. We should be able to talk about it. But just as importantly, because so many people have left the Christian tradition because they find it all so unbelievable, we need to be able to articulate it for others as well. I think a big reason that people have left the church, or maybe never even came to church, is because for so many, church doesn't make sense. We didn't do a good job of explaining what we mean when we say the words we say. And people became disinterested in an irrelevant tradition with empty rituals, a God that didn't deliver, and doctrine that didn't make sense. They walked away from a dead faith because it meant nothing to them. Or worse, it oppressed them. As I said last week, I'd probably walk away too. I'm sure I was on the verge of it. Until I realized that you could have a living faith, one that thinks critically, that embraces questions and understands metaphor, one that does not condemn. It sounds so simple, and yet Christianity, as it is largely practiced and understood, is failing. I think that's why churches are dying. We're so countercultural that we have no relevance anymore. And even though we, here at Fairview, think we do, we haven't done a very good job of getting the word out. We're so afraid of evangelism. But when we say evangelism, what we're really thinking about is proselytizing. We don't ever want to force our religion upon somebody else. And truth be told, the reason why we don't want to proselytize is because of our own theology. But we need to articulate our own theology. We do not think that people need to be converted because we don't proclaim that our way is any better than any other. So no, we don't want to proselytize, but we're so darn sensitive to crossing that line that we tread lightly about evangelism. And yet evangelism is simply about sharing good news. So if people have left in mass exodus right out the Christian door because they see it as an exclusive, narrow-minded religion that forces people to check their brains at the door while only permitting certain people to enter, then wouldn't it behoove us to articulate what we believe about God, church, the Christian tradition, faith? When so many people associate bad things, hypocrisy, exclusivism, condemnation, or worse, abuse, then we must know who we are, what we believe, and how we articulate it. Otherwise, Christianity is doomed. But there's still good news. We've got the good news. That God, that exclusive, condemning, sex-obsessed man God, is not our God. But if not, what is? What do we believe? Who, what is God? So this is our first step in our Lenten journey towards a living faith. Bishop Spong has a series of theses, and his first one is on God, proclaiming that understanding God in theistic terms as a being, supernatural in power, dwelling somewhere external to the world, and capable of intervening in the world with miraculous power is no longer believable. Most God talk in liturgy and conversation has thus become meaningless. What we must do is find the meaning to which the word God points. End quote. So if we're to look at the ancient world, we see this ancient understanding of a three-level universe. And in that, God existed on the top level, in the heavens, somewhere just beyond the clouds. You'd even thought they could build a ladder to get to God, right? So maybe there was a kingdom in the clouds. We even use that language today. But it didn't take long for humanity to outgrow this worldview. The universe has only gotten bigger and bigger, or at least our understanding of it has. God is not in a kingdom just above the clouds, looking down on us through some sort of a peephole of parted mist. And yet our language still refers to God as a being like this. God remains, for many, this big man, the image of a long, white-bearded man who sits on a throne in a castle in the clouds. That image, of course, we stole straight from Greco-Roman imagery. That's Zeus, right? But that gets to be our God, a Santa Claus Zeusy God that sits in the clouds. So our language here at FCC doesn't really reflect that, but unless we have explicitly stated why, we haven't really moved the dial. I suppose for me, a big part of the reason why I don't always explicitly state why is because I don't want to tell people what to believe, and I still don't. But at the same time, if we do not explicitly discuss the nature of God, then we aren't really doing the work of theology together. And since I'm always challenging you to wear your theological lenses everywhere and find God outside of Sunday morning, then we really need to be more explicit on Sunday morning. I think inherently we know that we're not out looking for a big man in the sky when we say, go out into the world and find God. I think that Spong's got it right. That's just unbelievable. We don't think that there's a big God that's a big man, and yet so often our language reflects that. This man God doesn't reach his hand down and stir the seas to cause a hurricane or shake the globe to cause an earthquake, nor does he swoop in like Superman to intervene in saving wars or winning football games. He probably isn't what we really mean at all when we talk about God. Last week, I shared about what could have been my own exit right out of this tradition that likely parallels the mass exodus we've seen when I talked about my dad dying. I knew there was no good reason for his death. He was the age I am now when he got cancer, died a year later. He had 3 kids, a loving wife, a beautiful family, if I do say so myself. God did not need to kill off my dad to teach me a lesson or drive me into ministry. I could not have prayed more fervently that he be spared from death. God did not need one more angel in heaven. I'd probably punch someone then, and hopefully not now, but sometimes it pushes me. When I hear the words, it was all part of a divine plan. It sucked. It was cancer, and it sucked. And I couldn't believe in a God that didn't save my dad if God had that power. I couldn't believe in a God that planned to take my dad's life at such a young age with children who needed him. As it was pretty hard to believe that God would allow the Holocaust to occur. But my own personal suffering led me to believe that God either was cruelly watching all this play out to teach us lessons, picking people off in their prime because God needed a little bit more help in heaven, or maybe God didn't work that way. Maybe God wasn't Superman. I had to choose between a benevolent God and an omnipotent one. I chose benevolent. But even then, I really didn't think about God as a big man. Maybe not even as a being at all. It wasn't until I took a philosophy and religion course in college that I read Paul Tillich and scraped away all that doctrine and all the orthodoxy and orthopraxy and embraced this idea that God was not a being, but rather God was the ground of all being. This resonated with me because I did feel like God was inside of me. God didn't feel external to me. But at the very same time, I had to admit that God wasn't external either. That I could feel God externally and internally. Not as a person, although many times I felt God embodied in people, in persons in my life. And sometimes, and we talked about it with the kids, I feel God, and still do, in nature, at the beach, by the ocean, even in the ocean, in the mountains. I knew very deeply that I was experiencing God. I'm guessing, just like many of you know and can affirm, that you have experienced God. But it was never a man God. And it wasn't a distant being far removed from my life. It definitely wasn't Superman. So what was it? What do we mean if we don't mean Superman or Zeus in heaven? How do we name this God? How do we put words to the indescribable? Can we know a God that we can't put into words? Well, Spong tells us that our inability to describe God doesn't mean that we're unable to experience God. He writes, "I think we can make the case that human beings are able to experience that which words cannot describe, and that experience itself can still be valid and real." And his argument comes straight out of the Hebrew scriptures and that ancient tradition of using the tetragrammaton. It's a few consonants put together that represents God, but without the vowels, it cannot ever be said. Because, of course, the moment we try to say God's name, we fail. Everything we try, every sound we make is lacking. So the only way we can ever understand God is by using a symbol. So whenever Jews come to the unpronounceable series of letters, YHWH, instead of trying to say Yahweh, like we non-Jews often try, they use another word entirely, a word that is not spelled by those four letters. They say instead Adonai, which meant Lord. But it was never meant to be God's name. It almost sounds ridiculous to have to say this, but Lord is not God's name. God is not God's name. Father is not God's name. Mother is not God's name. All of these are placeholders for the indescribable God that we experience. Even as theologians have spent thousands of years trying to describe God, we can only say what God is like, not entirely what God is. So I go back to the simple words of affirmation in the story of Moses and the burning bush. I am. But what? What are you? Who are you? How are you? I am what I am. Theologians have tried to make sense of this for thousands of years. In Spong's book, you will find a history of this evolution of our understanding of God, complete with theologians' postulations. But I think the thing that really matters is not necessarily the history of theological interpretation, although I think it's really important that we look at history and we interpret theology, but we only need to look to ourselves and this world that we are living in now, our culture, our society, and recognize that we have a hard time buying theism today. It just doesn't work. Okay, so rejecting theism sounds like we've become atheists. I see it in Rebecca's face. But, I mean, maybe there's a technicality of that that's true. But honestly, to reject theism, the idea that God is not a being, is not to reject God, the ground of our being. Instead, it is to reject an anthropomorphizing of God. Do you understand what I'm saying here? I don't blame us for doing it, and personally, I don't really think there's anything wrong with using language, human language, to understand our God, because that's the only thing we get. We have to use language to try to get a grasp on God. We must acknowledge, though, that all we can do is try to grasp the ungraspable, to speak the unspeakable, to understand that which we cannot fully understand, and yet embrace the mystery that we know deeply, the unknowable essence of all our being. So for this reason, I do like to use words like mother and father to address God. I use the word God itself. You hear me say it all the time. I talk about spirit and energy, the holy, the one. Not because I think God is any one of these things, but because my human brain, our minds, cannot fully grasp this concept. And so we must use language, even if we know our language is not comprehensive. But because we know our language is fallible, we cannot be beholden to it. It's all symbolic. It's all metaphor. It reminds me of this story, this Hindu story, of a man trying to show a dog the moon. Have you heard this one before? The man keeps pointing at the moon and says, "Look, look at the moon." And the dog just looks at his finger. And so the man's like, "No, no, I mean the moon, look at the moon." And the man just keeps looking at the guy, saying, "I'm looking at you, what are you talking about?" So he gestures more, more fervently, more fervently. "Look at the moon." And yet all the dog does is look more at him, more at his finger, failing to see the very thing that his finger is pointing at. The finger isn't God. The words aren't God. God just is. I am. The ground of our being, the essence of life, the mystery. And maybe Molly's right. God needs us. God needs us to be the embodied image of the divine, to do the work of God, to let love live fully, so that God can be reflected and known in our world. Amen. Now we're going to stand.